From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, a look at salmon fry heading out to sea, learning where salmon come from by peeking in their ears, and more. All coming up on this week's Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Alaska's governor and lieutenant governor helped dedicate a new vehicle-accessible dock under sunny skies on the Petersburg waterfront Saturday. The state-funded dock opened this spring and is another option for boats to load and unload gear and supplies in the busy southeast fishing town. Joe Vicknicki reports.
Boats started using the new drive-down dock in late March. The float and transfer bridge stick out behind the public cold storage to the very edge of Petersburg South Harbor, making a convenient spot for boats to tie up and unload. Mayor Mark Jensen welcomed a small crowd to a ribbon-cutting ceremony Saturday at the head of the dock.
Mayor, it's an honor to be here today to be involved in the dedication of this drive-down dock. It's going to be a beautiful facility for decades to come for our fleet.
Harbor Master Gloria Ann Wallen noted that the project has been in the works for 21 years. Wallen said she started working for the Harbor Department then when she was 17 years old. And after seeing a similar facility in Sitka, Wallen said she pushed for construction of one here.
We just live in such a marvelous place that things like that can be dreamed by a 17-year-old kid and built by PHS graduates. And here we are celebrating something that is really heartfelt and meaningful to this community. So,
local company Tamaco is the main contractor on the $7.8 million project, and many current and former Petersburg residents were involved in the construction, design, and even the state funding to build it. Former resident and state senator Bert Stedman, instrumental in securing the state grant money for construction, had a family obligation and was not able to attend Saturday's ceremony. Governor Bill Walker, wife Donna, along with Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott and his wife Tony did take part. It was Walker's first visit to this southeast community.
You know, I grew up in Valdez, and I thought that was the most beautiful place you could be, and I'd not been to Petersburg until about 2 hours ago. And my goodness sakes, what a gorgeous place. I love infrastructure, but more than that, I love people that have a vision and a passion to make things happen. 21 years, is that incredible? What a beautiful facility. It's here because someone had a vision, had a passion, had guts enough to step up and take a risk and say, we're going to do this. Now, this group of Vikings over here, could you come with Byron and myself back to Juneau? We need to round up some legislators. The Southeast folks are fine. We have no problem with them. Some of the Anchorage ones, we got some problems.
The mayor and governor then combined to slice through the ceremonial ribbon, although it's no longer a ribbon used to open harbor projects here.
We gave up the ribbon cutting a couple years ago. Last year we dedicated to North Harbor, and I think Mike Bangs came up with this idea to use ground line. How appropriate to cut a piece of ground line instead of a ribbon to open the access to our new dock here. So, Bill, did you join me?
And then when you get a chance, you can sure feel free to wander down there and take a look. And we had Lido bring over the Kestrel. So your vessel, your fish and game vessel is here. And so feel free to take a look.
Wow. Okay. This is
ready?
Pretty valuable.
Afterwards, the assembled crowd walked down onto the float, including Governor Walker, who acknowledged that the era of state-funded projects is probably a thing of the past.
Timing is everything, and Petersburg is fortunate that they worked on this during the years they did. It'll be a while probably before we could do another one quite like this, and this is a great success story.
The new dock has been getting use and will likely be getting much busier as Petersburg heads into its summer fishing season. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
The season's first batch of salmon fry will soon be entering the open ocean with lots of food and plenty of predators. Some will be back in a few years to spawn. Others will be back as soon as next year after they swim a giant counterclockwise circle of the North Pacific. But fishery biologists wonder about one salmon run that just left a Juneau stream earlier than ever before. And they're curious about how a new large mass of warm ocean water will affect those young salmon as they grow. KTOO's Matt Miller has more.
And it's good to separate them because the little fish don't like being in with the big fish.
John Joyce just counted one more pink salmon passing through the weir at Auk Creek, north of downtown Juneau. The tiny inch-long fry is a straggler. Most of his 14,000 siblings are already hanging out in Auk Bay before heading to the open ocean.
There's physical characteristics on the shape of their fins and the shape of their eyes and their coloration. You have the ability to tell them apart, but it does take some time to get your eye educated because we do rely on that to separate out the species.
Joyce is a fisheries research biologist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He says this year's outmigration of pink fry from Auk Creek is one of the lowest on record and 2 weeks ahead of schedule. That's based on data collected over 35 years. Joyce suspects the recent mild winters prompted by climate change are behind the subtle yet steady trend, but he's not so sure about another relatively new phenomenon.
But you're not willing to say that the blob was the cause of it.
No. It's the blob.
That's the name coined by Washington State climatologist Nicholas Bond for a huge, evolving, moving mass of warm ocean water in the eastern North Pacific.
We do know that in 2014, because of that warm water, that the base of the food web, production of phytoplankton that supports the whole food web, was reduced. Because that warm water served to kind of isolate the near-surface waters from the more nutrient-rich water below.
Bond says the blob is bad news for lower 48 salmon since the warmer water attracts less nutritious prey species. He says they're not quite sure how it will affect Alaska salmon.
The implications of climate change on fish species is important for them all, and salmon are actually going to be the first ones reporting back to us if there's a problem out there. And we'll know this year if the warm blob of 2014 caused something terrible to happen to the pink salmon, because they're just basically not going to return in high numbers this year.
Orsi also wonders about those Auk Creek pink fry heading out early this spring. He uses the term
mismatch
to describe how the out-of-sync fry may wander around and wait for their zooplankton breakfast to show up.
If they can't grow, they spend more time in the nearshore, the littoral zone near the beach when they're small, and they're more vulnerable to predators, you know, both avian and fish predators, because they need to grow to a certain size before they actually start moving offshore and migrating out into the open waters.
And how will the blob affect those out-migrating, still-developing pink salmon? Orsi says the salmon will grow faster in slightly warmer water, but they'll also need more food. And the warmer water could attract other unusual species and potential predators like blue shark and thresher shark and Humboldt squid. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the show online on demand at kmxt.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
When you catch a salmon, how do you know where it came from? That's long been a challenge to fishery managers. New research on the Nishigaak River, one of the largest king salmon runs in the world, uses chemical tags in a fish's ear bone to tell where it was born and raised. Sean Brennan, a postdoc at the University of Washington School of Aquatic and Fisheries Sciences, led the study. He and his team hope their research will help managers all over Alaska better understand how their fisheries work. KDLG's Hannah Colton has more.
In the summer of 2011, Sean Brennan spent a lot of time on the docks of Peter Pan Seafoods in Dillingham. He was dissecting the heads of salmon that were on their way to be processed. He collected ear bones from about 250 Chinook salmon.
Which involves cutting off the top of their head. And so you just take your tweezers, you reach below the brain, and you pull out the sac and the entire otolith.
He's saying otolith. That's the term used by scientists for the ear bone. Brennan and his team also headed up to the upper Nishigaak River to collect ear bones from juvenile fish in the streams there.
we would take out their tiny little otoliths as well.
He was interested in the ear bone because it contains an important clue about where the fish lived in streams and rivers before migrating to the ocean. That clue is called strontium. It's a chemical element found in bedrock.
But not all strontium is created equal. So some of the strontium in Earth is heavier and some of the strontium is lighter.
Those different types of strontium are called isotopes. They're like different shades of strontium that show up in different types of rocks. Water flows over those rocks all the time. The river picks up the strontium, which makes its way into the bodies of fish.
The different stretches of rivers that the fish are in are essentially tagging the otolith at that particular time in that fish's life.
So you end up with these slightly different strontium layers on the ear bone, and researchers can read them almost like rings on a tree stump. Brennan has been using his ear bone data to put together a map of different types of strontium in different areas of the Nooshigak watershed. What he wanted to know was,
can you use this tracer to actually figure out where fish came from and which habitats they used while they were in the freshwater environment?
And as it turns out, he could. Brennan says one exciting result of his research is that he can now identify seven distinct zones, seven different shades of strontium, in the Nooshigak watershed. So
when we catch Chinook salmon in Nooshigak Bay, we now have the ability to determine which of those seven groups produced that particular fish.
Scientists like Brennan say this is a big deal. Other tracing methods, like genetics, paint much broader strokes. There's just not much genetic variation between kings in Bristol Bay. But the strontium in a Chinook's ear bone can tell the precise tributary where that fish hatched and how long it stayed there. Brennan found that most Nooshigak Chinook stay in their natal streams until they head for open ocean. So what else could Brennan's strontium isotope tracking method be used for? USGS ecologist Chris Zimmerman, who advised on the study, says it could help fisheries all over the state better understand year-to-year changes.
One of the things we hear throughout Western Alaska is when we see declines, it's a bit of a surprise. And our hope is to better understand how freshwater habitats relate to productivity.
Brennan and Zimmerman hope this isotope tracking research will take some of that surprise out of the equation, helping predict the changes that may affect salmon runs.
You wouldn't find a year where commercial fishing or subsistence fishing had to be regulated like it has been on the Kuskokwim. Communities would have an idea that something like that was happening.
That's a few years off. For now, Brennan and his team have a few more ear bones to pick. The University of Washington team plans to study Chinook for a couple more years and add sockeye to the mix. Reporting in Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KFSK's Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg, KTOO's Matt Miller in Juneau, and KDLG's Hannah Colton in Dillingham. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.